I was gonna crouch and come up, but then it's just gonna follow me.
Sup, you beautiful bastards. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show. This is the final road show of the week. As you notice, I'm filming inside of this very well decorated house, nicer than anything I would ever put together. But that's because it is raining, and also over the last 2 days, I've been getting eaten alive by mosquitoes. And so I convinced everyone to go away for about the next 2 hours, and we're gonna put out a great show for you. So buckle up, hit that like button to let YouTube know you like these big daily dives into the news, and let's just jump into it.
This is a news show.
Let's talk about boobs and butts, shall we? And also, don't worry, this is not a return to the Philip DeFranco Show of yesteryear, 10 plus years ago. Instead, this is about the evolution of moderation of boobs and butts, and you know what, to be even more inclusive, boobs, butts, nuts, and clamps. And the reason we're seeing such a big conversation about this right now are the big changes just made by Twitch. Because Twitch just announced that starting tomorrow, content that focuses on intimate body parts for a prolonged period of time will not be allowed. And notably, this wasn't some hypothetical, abstract problem. Rather, a direct response to a growing meta on the platform, which, and you'll find a trend here, was based on a last on types of sexually charged content, right? Because while last time implied nudity got banned, other things like just having a camera pointed at certain parts of your body weren't. And it's evolving until people were like, oh, what if I just turned booty shorts into a green screen? Or the reverse, where people use green screen to block out everything you don't want the viewer to focus on. And while obviously this kind of content has its fans, and even for those who don't like it, finding this kind of method of skirting the rules pretty ingenious, you also had no shortage of creators on the platform who were at least a bit frustrated with how Twitch handled people who were clearly skirting the rules.
No, I mean, listen, okay, I'm not sitting here hating on the ladies because I keep saying this, right? If they ain't banned, that's on Twitch, right? If they ain't banned, it's on Twitch. Twitch is saying it's allowed, right? That being said, I'm just gonna say this because I just have to. I feel like I'd be not honest with myself if I don't. Come on, bro.
And since the ban, the general take has been that this is a good update, even if it's annoying that Twitch has to constantly put out community updates. Although you did have streamers in the space like Moist Critical and others feeling that this change isn't really going to actually produce change. They're saying this is just another part of the cat and mouse game that creators and the platform have been playing.
And now they're starting to get to this point where creators are starting to cross a line where it's getting to the point of like, there's a lot of softcore porn on Twitch now. And I'm very curious to see what kind of creative ways people will find to get around this policy change, because I don't think this is going to get rid of sexual content on Twitch overnight or anything. But I do wonder how they're going to navigate this now. I do think it's always going to be prevalent on Twitch because that content is so popular and there's so many people on Twitch. There's clearly a huge market for people digesting that kind of content.
There's also very notably been this feeling that Twitch has been bending over backwards to update the site rather than ban the handful of users who were constantly pushing the boundaries. Or with creators such as MorgPie, for example. Right, I showed some of her stuff earlier, but she's a pretty large streamer, and she's well known for pushing what's acceptable. Like, the last ban was on implied nudity, which was something that she excelled at. And while she was hardly the only person doing it, she kind of became the face of that. This general feeling is why we saw reactions like, you know what would solve all this? Just DM all the people who you know are causing you to keep elaborating on rules and just tell them, you know what you're doing, knock it off or get deleted. But already we've seen a lot of the conversation shift to more questions, and it may even give us a little insight into what the new meta will be. With people asking things like, are feet considered intimate? Also, some worried about specific unintended consequences from this. As a 3D modeler, I raise this question because when one is working on a 3D model, sometimes such focus is required because you're shaping it into what it is intended to be. And people also questioning what is a prolonged period of time. But ultimately, we're gonna have to wait to see what this crackdown does, how the meta changes, and how people that find how to kind of tiptoe the line, what they do. So I guess while we wait to see what the next loophole will be, I'd love to know your thoughts on this.
And then
we gotta talk about some of the big updates with that whole Francis Scott Key bridge collapse in Maryland. We talked about it back on Tuesday. You've probably seen that video clip that's everywhere. The giant container ship, it hits the bridge, it collapses. And the biggest update since we talked about it is that 6 people are presumed dead, with those 6 being people who were working on the bridge at the time of the collapse. And 2 of those bodies have been recovered from a truck that was submerged in the water, with Maryland State Police Colonel Roland Butler saying during a briefing,
the victims were identified as Alejandro Hernandez Fuentes, 35 years old, of Baltimore, and Dorlin Raniel Castillo Cabrera, 26 years old, of Dundalk.
With reports noting that those 2 came from Mexico and Guatemala, with both of those countries' governments, as well as the governments of El Salvador and Honduras, confirming their citizens were among those missing. But it'll also likely be a bit longer until more victims are recovered, with Butler explaining,
based upon the conditions, we're now moving from a recovery mode to a salvage operation, Because of the superstructure surrounding the vehicle, what we believe are the vehicles, and the amount of concrete and debris, divers are no longer able to safely navigate or operate around that.
So basically, officials believe that the remaining vehicles are stuck under the collapsed structure. Once the salvage effort is completed and the superstructure is cleared, divers will go back to try to recover the victims. But right now, there's not a timeline on how long that's going to take, which of course makes this time much more difficult for the grieving families. And Maryland's Governor Wes Moore recently extending condolences, acknowledging this pain. I mean, it's just devastating beyond imagination. But others also noting that the death toll could have been higher. And with that, pointing to a Mayday call that likely saved lives, limiting the number of people on that bridge. With the New York Times and other outlets actually publishing that audio, coming from the Maryland Transportation Authority Police Channel, and you can hear people saying,
I need one of you guys on the south side, one of you guys on the north side, hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching that just lost their steering. So that until you get that under control, we gotta stop all traffic.
Yeah, we're all on the route to the south side.
This is special.
I'm holding traffic now. I was dragging, but we stopped prior to the bridge, so I'll have all out-of-loop traffic stopped.
10-4, is there a crew working on the bridge right now?
Do you want me to stop traffic on their site right now?
Yeah, if we can stop traffic, just make sure no one's on the bridge right now. I'm not sure where, if there's a crew up there. You might want to notify whoever the foreman is, see if we can get them off the bridge temporarily.
They then discuss further plans to alert the workers and discuss for traffic stop, but then you hear this.
313 dispatch, the whole bridge just fell down. Start whoever, everybody. The whole bridge just collapsed.
An utterly terrifying call, but one that really did save people. And this is, right now, there are some fake 911 calls from this incident that have been going viral. And this whole situation having spawned tons of conspiracy theories. Which is why, as always is the case, and even more so these days, be careful with what you're reading and seeing out there. But unfortunately, you know, these conspiracies are likely only going to grow as the hows and whys are still being worked out. Right, like we talked about on Tuesday, we know this happened when the ship experienced a blackout. But right now, we're still waiting for more information as investigators look at the ship's voyage data recorder for a timeline and more answers. So officials have asked for patience, and Governor Moore also asking for patience as they work to reopen the port of Baltimore.
The collapse of the Key Bridge is not just a Maryland crisis. The collapse of the Key Bridge is a global crisis. The national economy and the world's economy depends on the port of Baltimore. The port handles more cars and more farm equipment than any other port in the country. But we are going to make sure that we are going to leave no one behind. We are going to take care of our people. At least 8,000 workers on the docks have jobs that have been directly affected by the collapse. We need to make sure we're supporting them in this moment. And we need to make sure that we are getting them back on the job.
But that is where we are right now. And more information, more fallout, very much expected to come. And of course, we'll be keeping our eyes on this and keeping you in the loop. And then, so in the past few days, you might have found yourself wondering, what the hell is happening in New York City?
You guys, I was literally just walking and a man came up and punched me in the face.
Out of nowhere, this man just came up and hit me in the face.
I was punched in the head. In New York City.
He goes, sorry, and then punches me in the head.
I have fallen victim to the men in New York City lifting an elbow or trying to punch innocent girls on the street.
And so those were just a handful of videos among dozens that have gone viral in the past several days, each of them recounting the same story. I was just walking down the street in New York, maybe looking down at my phone, when a man suddenly punched me in the face. With notably none of these being robberies, where the guy just runs away without taking anything, with many falling to the ground, suffering injuries, one woman getting a black eye and a concussion, and later telling the Today Show,
no, it's been really, really hard. I think it hits me in waves. A lot of crying because it was really, really scary.
Now, currently, it is unclear whether one guy is committing all these assaults or it's a trend among several unrelated men. Though a key thing is that police have arrested a suspect in at least one of those incidents, with it turning out to be a guy who actually tried and failed to run for mayor a few years ago, a guy who's also reportedly been arrested for similar crimes 3 times in the past 6 months, and a woman who identified him as her attacker posted this update on TikTok.
The NYPD got surveillance footage from the stores where the scene of the crime happened. He was arrested today. They were very on it and helpful, and obviously they arrested him very quickly. So I do highly encourage any of the girls who have also been assaulted, please make sure if this happens to you, report it to the police and try to remember as much detail as you possibly can where it happened. If you can get a photo of them, that'd be amazing.
But then even if several men, let's say, were responsible, we have no idea if these types of assaults have just suddenly exploded this week. Or thanks to TikTok, we have more and more people just sharing those stories as they see others sharing those stories. Which is why online we've seen people generally in two camps. With one camp going, how weird it is that you have one person or just several people people out of nowhere punching women on the streets, and then a second cam going, hey, look at this, this is happening all the time. But either way, these gross and brutal assaults right now, they're getting a lot of attention. And hopefully the person and or people that are responsible for this get swift justice. Because unfortunately, there are a lot of trash people out there that don't get thrown in the dumpster when they should. And then, you know, it's another day, and so there's another AI problem, which you're probably not shocked by. I mean, we've been talking about AI so much these days. With a huge chunk of that, of course, being about fakes, right? Fake nudes, fake books, fake songs. People use an AI to fake like they have a personality to help them with dating. But now, going back to like fake content, we're seeing new reports, for example, most recently, the Washington Post, showing how people's images are increasingly being used to make fake ads. And notably, they're often pushing offensive products and ideas. In the past 6 months, for example, stars like Taylor Swift, Kelly Clarkson, and Mr. Beast have had their likeness used to sell diet gummies and promote phony giveaways. But now the tech's so accessible that celebrities aren't the only targets. Instead, these scammers are just generally scanning social media for anyone they think would be a good face for whatever they're trying to sell. And if they can find video and audio of that person, which is pretty easy these days, they can use easily purchasable AI tools to create fake ads. You know, swapping out the sounds on an existing video with the AI-generated voice and even animating the speaker's lips. And the results at times are incredibly believable, with victims often unaware that their likeness is even being used. And again, it's not like you have to have a major online presence to be one of these victims. With Ben Coleman, CEO and co-founder of the deepfake detection company Reality Defender, telling the Post, if audio, video, or images exist publicly, even if just for a handful of seconds, it can be easily cloned, altered, and outright fabricated to make it appear as if something entirely unique happened. Right, and because this is happening to everyday people that don't have big audiences, it can be incredibly hard for them to sound the alarms and someone actually hear it. And this is these ads often end up being embarrassing or offensive. As we've seen with other disgusting uses of AI, they seem to overwhelmingly target women. You have, for example, some social media influencers like Mikkel Jantz, who was on her honeymoon when she started getting messages about a YouTube commercial using her likeness to sell erectile dysfunction supplements, with scammers taking this real video of her and adding fake audio describing a non-existent partner with sexual health problems. And you also have this video shared by a mother giving advice to her teenage son as she faced kidney and liver failure in 2020, but then it was altered to emulate a lewd advertisement starring an adult film actress. And we've seen both of those videos appear on YouTube, which says that it's working to improve its system of identifying and removing altered or synthetic content. But of course, this is not just a YouTube problem, and it's not just a social media problem. As around the country right now, law enforcement seems ill-equipped to tackle these types of cases. And while 36 states are moving forward with AI bills, we still don't have a federal deepfake law, and current proposals are largely limited to political ads and non-consensual porn. And on top of all that, there's the fact that a lot of this is taking place outside the US anyways, with law professor Danielle Citron telling the Post, AI grifters around the globe know how to play the jurisdictional game. For example, that video of Jantz, it was linked to a website registered in Brazil. And in another case, this fake video of a 20-year-old Ukrainian student at the University of Pennsylvania, it was shared on Chinese social media, with her praising Vladimir Putin and saying Russia was the best country in the world. But ultimately, that's where we are right now. And unfortunately, the reality is every single day from here, as has been the case recently, we're just gonna find more ways that this emerging tech's gonna be used to invade people's privacy, deceive others. And other than educating ourselves, really, we're just kind of left at the sidelines hoping that lawmakers and policy can somehow catch up. Though historically, that doesn't really happen.
And then,
you know, every now and then, I share one of my escapes from the daily dives into the news with you. Because, you know, the news and social media, it can be a lot. And thanks to today's sponsor, I've welcomed a new reprieve from social media because it's gaming fun without the anxiety. It's called Happy Clinic. It's a free-to-play game that's honestly got me hooked, and it's also harder than it looks. It's all about upgrading hospitals and improving research centers to treat your patients around the world. You hire different types of doctors to treat special cases as part of a super interesting storyline. And when you hit level 21, you can actually join a society with your friends for bonus rewards. It's really fast-paced, tough, and you have to be strategic to progress, but the struggle is worth the entertainment payoff. And every completed level earns you coins and gems for upgrades. And with hospital settings around the world, there's always a new challenge. You may find yourself playing this anywhere and everywhere you find time. Waiting for my wife and my kids while they're still getting ready. Or more specifically, playing Where Did the Kids Leave Their Shoes This Time? Which I've decided is no longer a me problem. So, you know, join me today in a new mini escape and get 2,000 coins and 50 gems to start your journey. All you gotta do is use my link in the description or use the QR code on the screen. Happy Clinic is free and available on iOS and Android. So what are you waiting for? Go get started and I'll see you there after level 21.
And then,
FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried has just been sentenced to 25 years in prison. Right, and this after last year he was convicted of fraud, with a jury finding him guilty of stealing at least $10 billion from customers and investors. And as CNBC noted, those 25 years are significantly less than the 40 to 50 years that prosecutors were after, but also a hell of a lot higher than the 6.5 years that SBF's lawyers wanted. Though this, as the Wall Street Journal reported, that regardless, it's likely he won't even serve the full term. term. And while before he was sentenced, he did give a statement expressing remorse, telling the court, "I'm sorry about what happened at every stage. At the end of the day, I failed everyone I cared about." Now, it's noted that the judge, Lewis A. Kaplan, wasn't really buying it, with him saying during the sentencing, "There is a risk that this man will be in a position to do something very bad in the future. And it's not a trivial risk, not a trivial risk at all. He knew it was wrong. He knew it was criminal. He regrets that he made a very bad bet about the likelihood of getting caught." And on top of his time behind bars, Judge Kaplan also ordered SBF to forfeit over $11 billion. But for now, that's essentially where this story wraps up, with the New York Times saying that his sentence is among the longest imposed on a white-collar defendant in recent years. With this, I gotta ask, what are your thoughts on the sentence? Especially if you're one of the people that were impacted. And then, jails in Michigan are profiting off of inmates by banning them from seeing their families. That's what's being alleged right now in two lawsuits against two jails in St. Clair County and Genesee County. Right, and specifically, the plaintiffs say that both of these institutions banned family visits in order to make more money off of the resulting increase in phone calls and other electronic communication. And the two complaints stating that these bans were part of a quid pro quo kickback scheme for the for-profit company Securus Technologies, which charges inmates' families, quote, exorbitant rates to communicate with one another through services such as low-quality phone and video calls, and adding that county officials agreed to ban in-person visits in exchange for a substantial cut of Securus's future revenue. Right, Genesee initially implemented its ban back in 2014, with the suit there arguing that the sheriff at the time enacted policies intended to drive up use of the paid video and phone calls and reduce access to the free on-site kiosks. But then, in 2018, the jail ended its contract with Securus and switched to Global Tellink Corporation, or GTL, and this at the direction of the then undersheriff in order to get a deal that could make more money. And according to the lawsuit, the profit-driven intentions of the jail officials were clear here, with one unnamed jail captain explaining the switch by saying, "GTL offers a set guaranteed commission that is more than the average monthly commission we're currently getting from Securus." And that agreement did prove to be very lucrative, earning the jail at least $240,000 in incentive payments each year based on its current policies. But this including from phone call revenues, technology grants, and a 20% cut of expensive video calls, which cost $10 for 25 minutes. But meanwhile, staying with Securus was insanely profitable for St. Clair County. And according to the lawsuit filed there, officials banned family visits back in 2017, which just so happened to be the same year that it set a contract with Securus that gives the jail, quote, kickbacks based on the number of video and phone calls purchased by jailed individuals and their families. And the impact was immediate. In the first year of the contract, the jail made more than $154,000, with those profits then nearly tripling the next year, skyrocketing to over $404,000. And in an email responding to those numbers, a jail administrator wrote, "Well, that is a nice increase in revenues." The county's accounting manager responding, "Heck yes, it is. Keeps getting bigger every month, too." And since then, St. Clair's gains have only continued to grow, reaching almost $500,000 in 2022. Where those jails and corporations profited off of blocking inmates from seeing their families and then charging insanely high prices for people desperate to have any kind of contact with each other. But the lawsuits noting that both jails charge twice as much for calls as other inmates in the custody of the Michigan Department of Corrections, arguing these high costs put families into an impossible situation of choosing between trying to maintain contact and paying for other necessities of life. With one plaintiff saying, "I can just barely cover my own rent and food. We only do phone calls. We can't do the video calls because they're too expensive and just not even close to being the same as seeing each other in person." And another telling the New York Times she even had to take up a second job just so she and her three-year-old could afford to communicate with her partner. So with this, the suits claim that these profit-driven family visitation bans violate Michigan's constitution, which notably, quote, enshrines family integrity and intimate association as fundamental rights. And beyond that, they argue that it also goes against a Michigan Department of Corrections policy on family separation that entitles inmates to family separation, quote, harms individual and public safety without serving any compelling government interests. And noting that studies have consistently shown that in-person inmate visits have a ton of benefits, not only for the emotional and physical health of inmates and their children, but also for jail safety, staff retention, employment, and recidivism after release, and ultimately saving the government money. Now with this, as far as how the defendants have responded, both jails have not commented, while both GTL and Securus have denied the allegation. But while we wait to see how this progresses, experts have noted that this isn't limited to Michigan, in fact saying that it's a part of a growing trend all over the country. Right, in 2015, a nonprofit reported that 3 out of every 4 jails in the country banned in-person visits when they implemented video visitation. And that's only gotten worse since the pandemic. Now on the flip side of this, some places have stopped charging for phone calls, with this including New York City, which made phone calls for inmates free in 2018, which notably was a time where they were making $20,000 a day in phone fees. And since, Los Angeles and Massachusetts have also made jail phone calls free. But with all that said, I now want to pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts with what we're seeing here? And especially, I'd love to know what you think if you have experience in this area. And then, this news, this situation that we're about to talk about, it's one of the messiest what the hell situations I've seen in a minute. Because it's crazy how like one kind of little thing turned into this absolutely giant legal mess, and there's like 6 parties involved now. Right, and so at the center of this story, you have a woman by the name of Ann Reynolds. Because back in 2018, she purchased an empty 1-acre lot in Hawaii for $22,000, where they're planning to host her meditative healing women's retreats there. Then, one day last last year while she was in California waiting for the right time to use it. She says she got a call from a real estate broker who told her two things. One, whoopsie, someone accidentally bulldozed your property and built a $500,000 home on it. And two, I just sold that home. So understandably, she's like, excuse me, what? And apparently, the property developer hired a contractor to build about a dozen homes in that subdivision, with the contractor then accidentally building one of those on Reynolds' lot, completely unbeknownst to her. So to try and resolve the mix-up, the developer offered to either sell her house to her at a discount or just swap her lot with another one that it claims is identical. But Reynolds refused both of those offers. Because while it might look like an ordinary lot to you and me, to Reynolds, it's anything but that. With her explaining to Hawaii News Now, it has the right foliage and spiritual and astronomical elements, all perfectly aligned.
I mean, there's a sacredness to it, and the one that I chose to buy, you know, that had it had all the right qualities.
But now, among other things, because of the new home that she doesn't actually own, she says that her property taxes have spiked from a few $100s to several thousand. And as if all of this wasn't complicated enough, squatters have since moved into the house, with Reynolds even telling Hawaii News Now that she found poop on the floor when she went to visit. And so with no one willing to budge, you have the developer now suing the contractor, the architect, the prior lot owner's family, the county that approved the construction permits, and yes, even Reynolds herself, with Reynolds' attorney arguing that it would set such a bad precedent if you could just build something on another person's land and then sue them for the value of it. And this is the contractors arguing that the developer is to blame for refusing to hire surveyors before it had the house built. And so now Reynolds has filed a counterclaim against the developer for, you know, obvious reasons. And so now it's so many people involved and so many things that have happened, it's kind of hard to see how this gets resolved cleanly. Right, so you've got every party in this dispute pointing fingers at each other, accusing the other of being the unreasonable one. And the wild thing is, like, the financial cost of fighting these legal battles, it's probably going to financially drain everyone. And maybe for more than the house is even worth by the end of it. It'll pass the question off to you. Not only what do you think should happen here, but what are your just thoughts in general? And then, and news completely unrelated to why I was in South Carolina this week, a lot of money was just found. Or like, you know how when you just put on a pair of pants you haven't worn in a while and you put your hand in the pocket and you're like, oh, unexpected money, what a win. Well, that's essentially what happened in South Carolina. And instead of it being like a $5 or a $10 bill, it was $1.8 billion. Just chilling in there. With the state and private accountants, quote, still trying to figure out where the cash came from and where it was supposed to go. And notably, this isn't the first time the state's books have been off. With just last year, the Comptroller General, who's considered the state's top accountant, having to step down after a $3.5 billion error in the year-end financial report that he oversaw. And apparently, these issues can be traced back to when the state shifted computer systems more than a decade ago. And basically, whenever the state's books were off, money was transferred into another account to balance everything out. And that's the account that now has $1.8 billion in it. But with that, there's of course a lot of questions that remain unanswered. And most of those questions are for Republican Treasurer Curtis Loftus, who says he invested the money in the account and made nearly $200 million in interest for the state. But of course, this is people asking why he didn't let anyone know about it. And his response has apparently been to say it wasn't his job. Writing in a letter to Larry Grooms, right, the Republican senator leading an investigation into the issue, that quote, the Comptroller General is attempting to shift responsibility to clean up its mess to the Treasurer. Also posting on Facebook that the Treasurer's office can't be held responsible for the Comptroller General's failure to do his job. And coming after Gaines in an interview with local news.
I've been elected four times. I get more than a million votes. I mean, people can love me, they can hate me, all that, but they know who I am. Nobody knows who that guy is. And he's working hand in glove with special interests and lifelong bureaucrats, and they're going to do what suits them. I don't work for special interests. I don't work for rich people.
And on top of those accusations, he says the Comptroller General's office has refused to meet with them or share information. But Grooms has said Gaines has answered every question his subcommittee has asked and that he has confidence in his work. Also noting that the $1.8 billion account was reported by Gaines' office in the first place. And that's even though he thinks Loftus should have been the one to do so. And with all this, it's also important to know that the current Comptroller General has been in that position for less than a year. And that's while all of this has apparently been going on for a decade or so. But in the meantime, you know, the investigation isn't over, and so we don't want to jump to any conclusions. You have lawmakers saying, you know, they're also going to wait for definitive findings before they spend the money. But either way, whoever is responsible, this is crazy. It really goes to show, like, how important it is to hold politicians accountable for what they do with our tax money. And also, yet another example of why I have incredible trust issues with pretty much everyone at every level of power. And then, finally, today we have announcements and yesterday today. As far as announcements, I'm excited to announce that next Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific, we got a new beautiful bastard drop. With that including our Being Me is a full-time job, shirts and crews. Where nothing good can last, shirts and hoodies, which I'll say I just absolutely love. Or when people say things like, this too shall pass, they're usually talking about something negative, but I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, because also the good things in life, they're gonna pass. So when we can, think about the people, live in the moment. We also have our great new Are You Happy gear, along with the unvaulting of the emotionally exhausted joggers. This is probably gonna be a little bit too transparent, but for reasons, if you're not already on it, I would recommend you get on the text line 813-213-4423 and or go to Beautiful Bastard and sign up for the mailing list, because something special, not a stupid joke or anything, is coming your way April 1st. Trust me, get on it. If you miss this, you're probably gonna kick yourself. But with that said, let's jump into those comments on yesterday's show, starting with the fact that there were a number of people that seemed very conflicted about watching the shows this week. With John saying, I'm sad you're working on vacation, but I'm happy that we still get shows, internally conflicted. And that was just one of many. So I want to make this clear. There are very few times that you should feel sad for me, and this is not one of them. My kids are on spring break. They are on vacation, and we've kind of just been shuttling them around to grandparents and family. And one, as a lot of parents know, when you are traveling with young children, it is at times not a vacation for you in general anyway. It's just you parenting somewhere else. But also more specifically, two, for a lot of parents that, you know, they have work from home jobs like I do, I'm not on vacation. I'm just working from home and parenting in another state. And luckily, because I've built the team out how I have, I'm able to accomplish the job of also getting a good chunk of family time as well. I love y'all, but if it was even a question of like, oh man, this is really messing up like the trip, I'd be picking family over this. But I love you, Face. Thank you for the concern. Then there was a lot of conversation around that attempted kidnapping we talked about at the top of the show, with Ricky Lover saying, the fact that the daughter in the first story took all the steps and still nothing happened tells me all I need to know about our justice system. Police and governors want to be tough on crime, but not crimes that don't look good to their resume, like stalking or sexual assault. With overestimated foresight adding, tough on crime, much like party of law and order, doesn't actually mean action to prevent crime. It means targeting minorities. With Grata 6 saying, the first story is just another case of, sorry, we can't stop him, call us when he kills you. They need to do something about stalkers beyond a simple restraining order. Though to that, you have people like N.W. Paul saying, not to victim blame in any way, but the notion that the girl didn't even have pepper spray on her while having a restraining order against a creep bothers me. I feel like you should be issued a taser when the order is granted. Though to that, we saw popular responses like that of Gwendolyn, who said, you're literally responding to a comment saying the justice system needs to do more because it has consistently and repeatedly failed victims, and your response is, it's the victim's fault and responsibility, though. Saying, quote, not to victim blame in any way at the start of your comment doesn't mean you're automatically okay to victim blame. People shouldn't have to live in fear when they've reported a stalker more than once and gotten a restraining order. And Forrest Trees saying, or maybe she shouldn't have to defend herself against fucking creeps at all. And finally, with this story, we saw just a lot of people praising the mom and the neighbors that helped. Though Scolady said, what blows my mind is how he had tried to grab her two other times and was still out on the streets. But because this time it was caught on film, they couldn't deny it was happening anymore. What our justice system has taught me is that you basically have to be recording yourself 24/7 as a woman, otherwise things that happen to you aren't taken seriously or believed. We also saw a good chunk of conversation about cats, to which I will say, I gotta give credit to cat lovers. I thought I was gonna get a lot more hate just for even covering that story. And I feel like a lot of y'all get a bad rap because of the most extreme in your community. But with this, we had people like Abso-freaking-lutely saying, Aussie here, I love my cat and I absolutely had him neutered as a kitten and keep him inside. He has a cat enclosure and goes on daily walks in a leash and harness in the rest of the garden in the neighboring park. This not only keeps the native birds safe from him, but it also keeps him safe from getting diseases from things that he catches, from injury, fighting other cats, and other dangers like getting hit by a car. I wish more people would think about these things rather than getting defensive about it. With Bobby Kitty saying, exactly, I think we need to normalize walking cats, which I will say, this is the first time I've ever heard of people walking their cats. But again, I've never owned a cat. I prefer dogs because I do not think that I should have a pet that is smarter than me. We also had EH9 sharing, I'm a vet and a cat owner, and I think it's important to also remember that outdoor cats are also dangerous to other domestic species. Example, canine parvovirus, often just called parvo, is a virus that jumps species from cats. It's a very contagious disease with a very high mortality rate. And the difference between quality of life between indoor-only cats and outdoor cats is clear where I practice. Outdoor cats are much more prone to trauma and diseases. With there also being a conversation about people who adopt cats and then just let them go. With Chalky saying, I still hate how a bunch of people adopted cats over the pandemic and then just fucking dropped them. Actually, a lot of people shared stories like that. With Paradox saying, I've seen so many people that just cycle through cats because they let them roam. They let the cat out, the cat doesn't come back, they get a new cat, rinse and repeat. One family I knew in high school went through 5 or 6 cats in a single year. Which I will say, that sounds like maybe you knew people that killed and or ate cat. But that's just a theory. A theory. What am I doing with my life? That is where we're going to end today's show. As always, thank you for being a part of these daily dives into the news. Also, the next time we see each other, I'll be back in my cozy little film dungeon. Until then, just remember, my name is Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you right back here on Monday. You on my mind a lot. Don't need no time watch. I don't know how I got you on
in my pocket spot. Yeah, this babe needs you every day. You like my oxygen.